Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
Is there anything anybody loves more than agreeing with Tauscher?
Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher.
I got a hunch this isn't going to be concise either.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio.
I would say that you are pretty easygoing. You're actually probably more easygoing than I am.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
Well, there's no... You're not easygoing at all.
Hey!
On 100.5 ESPN, the ESPN app, and Wisconsin On Demand.
Wednesday edition. I guess the Packers were sellers at the trade deadline edition. It's not a store. You can't just go out and pick what you want. Goody said edition. But they did not add to their roster edition. And the Preston Smith's snaps and production were going down. But is it the right move to move on from a player like that when you are a Super Bowl contender edition? I'm Wilde and Tausch, a 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, ESPNWisconsin.com, the ESPN app, your Alexa smart speaker, streaming live video, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and of course everything you need on WisconsinOnDemand.com and the Wisconsin On Demand app. I'm Chase Wilde in Green Bay. Jesse Nelson is in the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios, bespectacled. No contacts today.
Now we're in a rush this morning. Getting in, yeah.
And from his undisclosed location, he is the Packers Hall of Famer. He is Mark Tauscher. Tausch, good morning. How are you?
Good. Jesse, what are you in a rush about?
Our dog got out this morning, and I hope Becca's not listening because I haven't told her yet. She wasn't home.
Oh, dear.
So we have this old fence in our backyard, and I always let Mo... Becca works from home a couple of days a week. A couple of days she goes into the office. And today was one of the days she was in the office. So it's... You know, Mo and I have this kind of system in place where when I'm kind of packing up my backpack...
You feed him snossages.
The infamous lunchbox that ended up in the tree. I'm always packing that up with the food for the day and whatnot. So I let him outside. I throw his ball outside. He goes and gets the ball, takes care of his business outside while I finish packing everything up. He comes in. I give him a treat. I leave. It's all good. We have this fence that our old owners made themselves at the house.
DIY.
It's a DIY, and it's very much a
DIYF.
It's falling apart underneath. Like, and there's a lot of spots where
is it a rot deal? Termites?
It's just old. Like if you take the lawnmower and you hit up again, like it can just very easily just boop, snap. It's not a very strong material.
I'm gonna do you a favor.
Yeah.
I'm going to do you a favor for your...
Tausch is going to come build you a fence.
No, I worked at Owens Forestry Products back in high school.
Free advertising.
I know how to plane wood. I know how to grade wood. I know how to saw wood. I am going to come over and help Jesse build his fence.
What?
And we're going to digi-only it. Now, the problem that I'm not good at is the architecture and the actual... the building of it, but... If you just get a tree, I can come in there. You have to have... Here's what I need. I need
chop
a huge
down
saw.
Chop the nearest big tree.
A planer. A planer where it kind of stripes the wood down and gets it. And then I can cut and measure and saw all of it, and then you have to put the fence together, though. You on board?
So what are you actually doing?
On board. That was good.
It sounds like you're just saying, like, let's just go to Fleet Farm and we'll get stuff, and then you're
no,
in
no,
charge
no, no.
of making
I wanna
it.
I want to actually saw... I want to saw the wood. Like I told you, I spent, I want to say two summers, for sure one, in a lumber yard. Like that was my summer job. I was a lumber yarder. That's what I did. And I did all
a lumberjack, some might say.
So wait, so you're offering him the opportunity to go out and purchase the equipment for you, chop down a tree, and then have you turn said tree into boards that he will then have to assemble.
So all you want to do is saw stuff. You don't want to do anything else.
I love plane and stuff. And the old wood lathe, I told you guys, you get the old wood lathe where you get the little, you chip it down, you make a baseball bat, you can make a pencil. You got to be really skilled. But yes, I think this would be a fun project. I've been looking for more hobbies and things to do. I want to be a part of the Jesse Nelson DIY fence build. Fleet Farm, great partner. We'll partner with them. We'll go over there. We'll get the lumber, and we'll figure it out.
Jesse, are you on board?
I mean, it's better than nothing.
But it's pretty much close to nothing.
I'd kind of like just rather get a new fence in general and have some pros put it in and do it instead of relying on Tausch and I's expertise to get it done. But I guess it's some help, and obviously Fleet Farm is great. If I was going to do this myself, that's where I would start.
I'll get my buddy. My buddy Woj is a really good construction guy. And he's got time on his hands. I'll get him to come help.
I mean,
he'll be our, like, white hat. No, he'll be like the guy that actually knows what the hell he's doing. And then we'll just do the labor part of it.
Kind of like what you pretended to be when you were on the job site for Johnson & Sons Paving?
That's a low blow. That's a low blow.
Well, he was on the job site.
He was, yeah, but he wasn't really.
He didn't pretend to be there.
By the way, I did a hell of a job. No. I did a hell of a job on that job site.
Uh-huh,
uh-huh. How many people could host a radio show while they're paving?
Not many.
I don't know many.
The DIY fence is what got us into this problem in the first place, though. Like, that's what I'm trying to avoid is the old owners
should
the DIY.
Honor the old owners. You should honor the old owner's house. How they built and how they did it.
By presenting many opportunities for our dog to go chase his ball through the fence and run around the neighborhood and then come back to the front door and drop the ball at the front door. And then we go, oh, who's at the front door? We open it, it's Mo, and he's back at the front. Okay, great. How'd you get there, buddy?
I'm on fleetfarm.com. They have lots of pre-cut lumber options. So I feel like we could... We could cut out the middleman, right? But we'd be cutting out the middleman, which is you. But you've also announced that this is the only part you can do, so it would really be cutting you out of the process entirely, unless you wanted to come and supervise.
No, if we get the measurements, I can also saw. Like I can. I got really good skills when it comes to sawing lumber. So we'll figure it out, Jesse. If I'm here and available, if that's something that you desire, I'm more than happy to help.
Jerry Odd says, I'd imagine Carpenter Chad would be willing to lend a hand with the fence as well.
It's funny you say that. That actually, Scuba Chad is not a scuba dude, but construction is kind of his background. So,
interesting.
I don't know if that's going to help. Yeah, I'm not sure if that will help.
I'm not sure you're going to help.
I was just going to say, I'm not sure who would be more helpful.
Okay. Well, we're here solving problems today on Wildy and Tausch. Jesse, I'm glad that Mo is home safe and sound.
The good news is he knows, like, he doesn't have it better anywhere else. So, like, this isn't the first time he's gotten through one of the little holes underneath the fence and he's been able to explore a little bit. But I'm dead serious. Like, every other time, he just comes right to the front door and he's like, oh, I got out the fence. I just wanted to show everybody how I got out the fence. And then he knows he wants to come right back. Today was the first time I went and looked at them. Like, oh, he is not there. And I don't know where he went, but he ended up coming back to the garage door at some point. So it took a little longer than usual. It's a little scary this morning.
And how much of a yard do you have? Like, how big of a fence are we talking here for Paul Bunyan to get to work on helping you?
I would say this. It's not a small fence.
Turtles can come in and out.
We have talked about in our efforts to look at potentially replacing the fence, we would probably want one smaller than what we have, is kind of the conversation that's taking place to this point. So we can discuss, I guess, what that would look like. But yeah, anything to keep the turtles out. Make sure we keep that nice and clear.
And
too,
the dog in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you're not open to like a chicken wire fence, which we could probably get up pretty quickly.
No. We don't want that. We have a general idea. We wanted to go different than the one we currently have, like the kind of, you know, stereotypical like plywood kind of looking fence.
Mm-hmm.
We were wanting to go maybe more of like a metal one, but obviously if Carpenter Tausch wants to help us, then I guess we'll change our philosophy on that.
It's gotta
a bit.
Be wood. If it's not wood, I'm not gonna be able. I'm not your guy. Because that's
you're not
my
our guy. What... You're not his guy at all. You've offered
you've
very
just
little.
To be
Why
the
are
guy?
You poop? Why are you poo-pooing this so much?
You started by having him cut down a tree. That's where you started.
That's my specialty. My specialty is in breaking down the lumber and getting it to the Fleet Farms with it treated properly, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. I believe Jesse and I are already taking shrapnel in the YouTube chat. Joe, I'm guessing two of the three members of this panel never held a hammer before. No, I've held a hammer.
I would agree with Joe.
Y'all
are soft.
Yeah, you should have
seen. Y'all's hands haven't been calloused much. If we're being honest, y'all's not a lot of calluses on them hands of yours.
Last night,
is that fair?
For my birthday, Becca got me as kind of a joke present. It's like a kid's little basketball game, and trying to put that together, even just with a screwdriver and a few batteries and a little net
struggle bus.
That was tough. Yeah, I will admit the YouTube
Jason,
comments
I know
are probably
your feet
right on
have
me there.
Calluses from walking on hot coals, but and again, this isn't to disparage you.
No, not.
Well,
doesn't
and,
sound
and you
like
burn
it at
your
all.
Tennis shoes on hot coals doing a barbecue pit.
No, but that's okay. The shoes did melt from the adjacent heat.
Close.
But yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Last question, Jesse, before we get to the trade deadline. What is going to happen when Becca finds out that you nearly lost Mo? Because you feel confident she's not listening to the program while she's in the office. But sooner or later... Are you going to try and just, hey, he came back, so there's no harm, no foul?
Yeah.
And just not mention to her that he went on an excursion?
Yeah, Mo went on a little field trip this morning. She's actually worse with him getting out than I am, so I feel like I've got a couple built up here where I can, I'm not too worried about it yet.
And the previous owner's shoddy workmanship on their fence, this is not your fault at all, is what I'm hearing.
No, there's a lot of reasons in play here, yeah.
Okay. Well,
pointing fingers.
It's maybe
if we didn't let the dog run around outside of the yard without his collar on a bunch, then maybe he wouldn't want to run around
question,
as much.
Jesse, I think the big question we haven't gotten answered yet is who let the dogs out? Woof, woof, woof. That's the real question that we're missing here.
Well, we know the answer to that one. It's a good one.
But we don't.
Jesse did.
No, but we don't. No, Mo let himself out is what I was understanding. Who let them dogs out? Get the look you want for your home with customizable windows and doors. From Pella, the durability of material gets tested tens of thousands of times to ensure that they last for years to come, unlike Jesse's shoddily built fence. Pella offers custom colors and innovative features like shades between the glass. And right now, celebrate Gina Della's 60th birthday with 0 for 60. Zero down, zero interest for up to 60 months. Certain restrictions do apply. Hold your appointment on or before. What is today? The 6th. You got 2 days, November 8th. Get started today at PellaWI.com. What if you put a Pella door, on this fence, you built it, and you had a little door, you put a little doggy door within the door of the door, and you build it up that way.
Why do you keep saying door that way?
You get a doggy door within the door.
Wouldn't discourage the dog from going
just
outside.
Just what I was about to say. All right. Not that you would be able to tell from listening to our program or from the Packers' lack of acquisitions, but the NFL trade deadline was yesterday, and the Packers made a move. They traded their most veteran position player out of Green Bay. Is this smart, or is this something that even Brian Gutekunst admits he could be asking himself a question. We'll tell you what that question is and what the move was next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
The Packers did not stand pat at the trade deadline. Much like a year ago, they traded away a veteran player on defense to a playoff contending team to make way for younger players to get more opportunities. Last year was Rasul Douglas. This year it's Preston Smith. Tausch? Before we break down what Goody had to say about it, your reaction is or was?
Not shocked.
What?
Not shocked. And I think, did we not say that yesterday? I know there was a lot of Newsom talk in the, you know, googly eyes, which I love. Love googly eyes.
Except for it didn't happen.
Well, but it was still googly. You just know, if you don't know the ethos of Brian Gutekunst by now, you're not paying attention.
Shame on you.
He wants young, hungry football players. He is not interested in 30-plus. If you're over 30 years old and not a quarterback, kicker, I don't even think punter, you're probably not going to be here very long. There has been a few times, D-Bach, I'll be fascinated to see what happens with Elgton Jenkins as his contract thing starts unwinding. But you have to, and I think he said this with Devontae, you got to be a Hall of Fame type player. He ain't interested in a bunch of guys on their third contracts.
No.
He wants elevator guys. And Xavier McKinney, elevator guy. Preston Smith, thank you for your service. You were an elevator guy when we brought you in.
True.
And that draft, that recruiting class, that free agent class that he brought in, helped rebirth this franchise from that dark, gloomy, snowy, wet day at Lambeau Field versus the Arizona Cardinals.
True.
That rebooted it. You got championship game. Now, did they get to the big game? They have not. But Preston Smith deserves a lot of love for his time in Green Bay. But I'm not remotely shocked. His play time started dipping.
Did.
And if he was not dominating and being the, I guess, a great pass rusher that the Packers needed, we haven't seen that. He's made some plays, and I think he's a good player. But at this point, you know you're moving on from him. You know you're going to cut him so you don't get any picks. And the biggest thing, and this is where I'm pretty sure, and I have not heard, I've heard snippets of the Gutenator, but he wants his young guys to play. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get better is by playing. And Preston Smith is an impediment to these young guys playing. So I'm not remotely shocked. That came across my desk, and I was like, yep, makes sense. That's a Gutenator move.
Yep.
That's what my guy does. So not surprised at all.
We definitely discussed it yesterday on the show, and I want to get to me asking Goody about the parallels between trading Rasul Douglas and trading Preston Smith. But I want to read.
Oh, did you ask that question?
I did.
That'd be a good question to ask.
Thanks. But I do want to highlight what he said later when he was asked about the having a team that can contend for the title this year and him saying that he does. But he did have this line, and I want to read it verbatim. I like our depth. Then he knocked on the podium. But that can change in a hurry. And whenever you move off a player like Preston Smith, you're a couple injuries away from, man, that may not have been the best thing. So I like the fact that he recognizes that, yes, while his playing time was dipping, you don't know what's lurking around the corner. and moving on from him while it clears some cap space, while you were never bringing him back next year. His cap number was $13 million or whatever it is. So this all makes sense unless you run into injury problems at defensive end. And then even he would acknowledge there's a little bit of risk there. But to your point, what you said about younger guys, Lucas Van Ness, Aaron Mosby, Brenton Cox, that was a, discouraging. That Brenton is the Cox. Crux of Goody's reasoning. Here is the question and answer about the Rasul Douglas, Preston Smith trades.
Goody, I want to try and help fans understand, like, last year you're 3-6 and you trade Rasul, but you're probably not thinking at that moment, hey, we've got a team that could be winning the Super Bowl. Now you feel like you have a championship team, and even if Preston's snaps weren't going to be as many, there's probably still value to him. So what's the, when you have your team in the position it is there a risk of moving on from an older player, or is it, again, the young man's game conversation?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's no different than last year. I think there were some players we wanted to see. I think that, you know, the trend of how the snaps were going was only going to continue that way. So, you know, I think it's, again, it wasn't something that we set out to do. It wasn't something that we called a bunch of teams saying, hey, are you interested in Preston Smith? Because we know his value. But when the opportunity came and we got the phone call, we just thought it made sense for us for what we're trying to do. And again, I think he's going to a very good situation with a playoff caliber team and a really good organization. So that always, for my end of it, does help a little bit, especially with a guy who's given to us what Preston has given to us.
Is it the same situation, though?
No.
I mean, that was the first thing he said, was it's no different than last year with Rasul, but it is different
Goody,
than last year.
Listen, man, there ain't anybody that's more of a Goody stan than old T. I have been on the... And by the way, I've been right. I know Ned disagrees with me pretty vehemently from time to time, but...
Not to be confused with a retired Navy fella. That's a different person.
I've been correct more than I've not with my appreciation and support.
Because Goody's been correct more than he has.
Goody's been on it. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've also called him out on his kicking stuff. That was a mistake. That didn't work. Uh-huh. So I'm not just some, stan. I'm just
rubber
a stan,
stamper.
Not a stan. But the Preston Smith, Rasul Douglas, it's not a comp. So I understand the question, and it does get you inside the mind. In Goody's mind, it's the same thing in the regards of, we got to get young guys in there that are going to play. And for the older guys, especially with Sewell, you got a third-round pick. I mean, now you had to give up a fifth, right? So it really ended up being
correct.
A fourth,
correct,
according to the analytics of it.
Indeed.
But in this case, I think you saw the writing on the wall. There's a lot of money that you're going to end up taking a cap hit regardless. But you do get the opportunity to get these other guys a ton more, and it's now on them. There's always a little bit of a, okay, what's my role? Oh, Preston, we gotta almost adhere to Preston. Preston wants to come in the game on a 3rd and 6. He's a veteran. He's going to get out there unless the coach reins him back in. Now Lucas Van Ness knows, hey, man, training wheels are off. Time to work. Time to go. Kingsley, hey, time to go. Mosby, time to go. And that, I think, is more of the mindset from the Gutenator.
Time to go.
Well, he hasn't even dressed. Is he dressed
in the game? He has not been active yet, no.
But they like his talent, and they want to see it. You know what? I always say, we have to stop with, this guy's name. Cox might end up being a great name as a Packer. He might be the guy. We don't know. Mosby. Hey. Lloyd Mosby, before he took over for John Olerud, you think anybody thought he was the guy? I don't know. I don't even know if that math adds up. When he was with the Blue Jays, Lloyd Mosby was just a guy coming up. And then Jesse Barfield maybe hurt his arm, and Lloyd Mosby came in to play. And Lloyd Mosby got a name, just like Aaron Mosby could get a name because Preston Smith leaves. That's the circle of life in professional sports. Jesse, you're pretty impressed with that little college drop, aren't
I've never heard of Lloyd Mosby until this moment. I've heard of Barfield.
Lloyd Mosby.
Big arm. Great arm. Jesse Barfield. He, man, from right field, he had a hose. He did.
I can't believe we have a Mosby reference.
Listen, and what I was going to say as you're doing your Mosby research, you think Goody, if he'd have gotten a sixth-round pick from Philly, would he have traded him to Philly?
It's a great question. Maybe.
Yes.
Because he believes that he's
the best pick,
it's time
right?
to move, right? Just for clarity's sake, Lloyd Mosby.
What if Detroit offered this? What if Detroit offered the same thing for Preston that they offered Za'Darius?
That would have been very tempting, I would think. But you can't do it in the division, I wouldn't think.
Can you? Vikings traded Christian Watson.
Yeah, the Packers made the trade too, that allowed them to get Brian Branch too. So the Lions. So
he's a pretty good player.
Lloyd Mosby's final career with the final year with the Toronto Blue Jays was 1989, which also coincided with John Olerud's first year with the Toronto
so
Blue Jays.
So I flipped it. So. Olerud ended up taking over, but Mosby took over for a Barfield or for somebody else in that era.
Mosby was an outfielder. Exactly. Olerud was a first baseman. It's tomato, tomato.
Yeah, but it's a third, bat and third. Listen, man, I don't know a lot of other
Wait,
Mosbys.
Lloyd Mosby batted third in their lineup? Do you know that?
No, I'm saying I don't know a lot of other Mosbys that I can make this correlation to. If you know more, let me know.
If only he'd have been a catcher in the 90s, we'd really be on
brand. Since when can we only compare players with the same last name to each other?
Does it not help?
I need more on last name Roberson and all the other last names that we go by around here. All right. Speaking of
Packer
last
fans, ready for some game day excitement? Well, next time you're at Lambeau, stop by the American Family Insurance Title Townhouse and experience the thrill of making a game-saving play like an Olerud or a Mosby with our interactive Protect the End Zone game. Plus, don't miss out on all the amazing giveaways from exclusive Packers merch to special prizes. There's something for everyone. Visit us at Titletown to make your game day unforgettable. For more info, check out amfam.com/Packers. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. This has become kind of my new favorite hobby. Jumping the gun with lives before you can spit it out. That's kind of my new fun hobby I'm doing. It's like Lloyd
sure.
Mosby did. I'll tell you what, Jason, before we go to break, my favorite prank of all time. And I don't remember who it is. I've retweeted this a couple of times. It always pops up on my feed. Is when Joe Carter, they used to do these car giveaways. And Joe Carter from the Blue Jays, I don't think this was Lloyd Mosby's car, but he grabbed a car from the dude. It was his car, and he drove it up on the field to give it away to a fan that won some contest at the Sky Dome. It's probably the best clip and the best prank I've ever seen a professional athlete pull off.
And that's our NFL trade deadline breakdown.
Jesse, YouTube that and see if we can't play that coming. But it's so good. It's so good.
I'm just a little disappointed that Jesse Barfield and Lloyd Mosby made the cut. But George Bell did not. He hit a lot of home runs.
Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a player now.
We really need to get to Brian Bulaga like
Dave
5 minutes ago.
Do you remember Dave Steeb?
I do.
This
great
is actually
mustache.
Great. Bulaga said he's having technical issues, so if you just want to name some players or the Toronto Blue Jays for the next 5 minutes, we might be good.
Well, Joe Carter is the gold standard,
well,
right?
Olerud. I'm trying to think who were their middle infielders in that era? Because they had a good little championship run there.
I don't know, but I found a photo of George Bell, Lloyd Mosby, and Jesse Barfield together, so I can tweet that out for our avid listeners to Wilde and Tausch. All right, we're going to try and get Brian's technical issues resolved because I don't want to talk Dave Steeb and other great Toronto Blue Jays heroes. I want to talk to Bulaga.
I can't imagine for Al Leiter, or is that too long ago? Like that pitching staff, Steeb. There's other guys on that staff that were big-time players. Dave Righetti? Was he there?
I'm going to have to do some fact checking, and I will get back to you in your interest in our Canadian favorite baseball team and the only one left at this point.
Well, no, I don't want to mislead our fans. The 94 Expos are my favorite. That's who I played RBI3 baseball with. Marquise Grissom, Delino DeShields, that whole crew. That was I didn't get beat much in RBI3.
Good news, Bulaga's issues are done. We can move on.
God, that Tony Fernandez was a great shortstop, though. Brian Bulaga scheduled to appear next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
Wildy and Tausch is brought to you by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Tito's makes the good stuff for good times. Find recipes, videos, and more at Tito'sVodka.com.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of. But back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in. But when I go back home, I've got some famous friends.
Time for Brian Bulaga. Brian, I don't know how to tell you this. You've done a great job for us. We're happy with everything you've done. You've been a great leader in our locker room, the Wildy and Tausch locker room. You've been productive. But we want to get Jesse and Pablo Iglesias and Riley Yauch more airtime. So we're trading you to the classic country western station. So you'll be doing segments with them every Wednesday at 10:30 Eastern time. All right, the trade deadline happened. What was your reaction that they did not add, but they traded away another 30-year-old player, and now they're down to two, kicker Brandon McManus and linebacker Eric Wilson. That's it. That's the list.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not surprised that they're slowly but surely eliminating the 30-year-olds on the roster. It's not completely shocking, right? I mean, I think we've seen that trend as Goody's kind of gotten a stronghold of this roster. I am a little surprised that no one else got brought in, right? Like, I think we look at our pass rushers now at this point, right? Van Ness, Gary. And I always butcher his last name. I hate doing it. Egbenari, is that how you?
An Agbare.
An Agbare.
Yeah. JJ, just call him JJ.
Yeah. Okay, JJ. That's good. So those are the three pass rushers, right, that we look at standing up or not standing up anymore, but that are on the edge. So we got a three-man rotation. So clearly they think they see something in those two other guys that they want to give them more time, right? They wouldn't make that move to send away Preston if they didn't think they saw something with those two to give them more time. Now, my only concern with that is, right, injuries do happen throughout a season, and if one of those guys does have to miss some amount of time and you only have two edge rushers, it's a problem, right? It's a little bit of an issue, which is why I thought they would have done something to go get an edge rusher in the trade market. I know there was talk between a corner and an edge rusher and what is what. But I always look at it, and maybe I look at it because of what I did and having to deal with these edge rushers up front. There's no better friend for a corner than an edge rusher, right? If the edge rusher can force a quarterback to get rid of the ball really quick, that's better for the corner because he can sit on routes, he can jump routes. If you don't have a good pass rusher that doesn't get home, that's worse for the corner. It doesn't matter if you have a great corner. If the corner has to cover for 4 or 5 seconds, he's in trouble. It doesn't matter, right? Like anyone can get open in 4 or 5 seconds. So I was a little surprised to see that they didn't go get someone. Now I understand, there's cost to these things to go get high-end rushers. Those guys cost money, and I understand that. But I think this team's a serious contender. Even after what happened on Sunday, I still think the team is a serious contender, and that to me is the one. Now, when you eliminate a pass rusher, that's the one area now that I'm concerned. We were already struggling in the pass rusher department.
Yeah, but Blue, he was not going to play much. They were going to cut his snaps. They got a seventh, And this is Goody's MO. Now, he wants his young guys to play. He doesn't think that those guys, it's almost Billy Bean-esque, where it's, all right, we're going to get these young guys to play. And if we have to, you know, trade Preston, who we respect and appreciate what he's done, you have to let these young guys grow. That's what he did last year. And now that we're a Super Bowl contending team, it's a little different, obviously. But that's Goody's MO. That's what he does.
No. Hey, I listen, I got no problem with it. Like in my own, like my only concern is that who else is on the roster?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because injuries do happen.
Cox.
Who?
Cox.
Brenton Cox, yes. We've enjoyed his.
Like,
who's yet to play all season. Mosby, yeah, he's up to seven snaps on the season. So he is definitely going to get more opportunities.
More.
Yep. Obviously, you know, Goody did say that they've already ramped up Lucas Van Ness's snaps, so he's not necessarily going to get more. I would think that Kingsley Enagbare is the guy that will now line up as a starter opposite of Rashawn Gary. But look, Goody also said that we got to get more out of all those guys, which, mm-hmm. again, he had the opportunity when I asked him specifically about Rashawn Gary to give a vote of confidence of, you know, he's going to be fine, I'm not worried about him, he's getting double teamed, whatever. And it was like, no, we need Chippy. More out of all those guys. So
Blue, one of the things I was just questioning is, how do you think that goes in the locker room when you have this team and you're 6-3 and you just had a tough loss, but you trade away one of your veteran leaders? How does that shake out in the locker room, in your opinion?
Well, I think because it happened last year, the team's more adapt to it, right? Like, they traded Rasul last year, who was a well-respected veteran in the locker room. And I get that, but he was still a respected veteran-type guy in the locker room, and they were able to adapt and adjust and kind of, you know, deal with that as a group and move on. So I think that they're accustomed to doing that. Now, like you said, they were in a different position, and it's different when, you know, that record is flipped around and you're a contender, mm-hmm. and you're in the hunt a little bit more, right? Like, it's a story. And you feel like you're losing. I mean, like you said, Tausch, like his snaps were going to be reduced, and obviously the production was a little bit down. But there's a comfort with younger guys knowing they have an older veteran that's been there, done that. You can rely on them in certain times and for certain things. And there is a little bit of comfort in that, and that's not there. But I think the locker room is strong enough with these guys because they've experienced it to kind of absorb that and continue on. And it should be giving the guys that are in those the other DNs now in that room, it should be giving them a lot of confidence that, you know, the staff and that the GM believe in them to step up and earn more time and earn more of an opportunity, right? Because that's what this is. They're getting more of an opportunity with Preston leaving, and you have to make the most out of it, right? Like, you get this opportunity whether they've earned it with their play or not, right? What, you know, I guess we can all debate that from everyone up front, because there hasn't been much production if we look at this thing as a whole. Whether you think they've earned it or not, that's the situation they've been given, and they got to go make the most out of it.
So, Blue, if you were a GM, would you kind of go with the Goody approach that when you get to be 29, 30 years old, it's like, how would you do it? Because if you look at it, there's been some that he's, you know, made maybe a mistake, but I don't know who. You start getting into that third contract, you better be a big-time player, because Goody's just not going to go there. And I know he just gave Kenny Clark a third, but Kenny Clark was like 14 when he got in the league. So how would you approach that?
Yeah, listen, I think it's on a per-case basis, really. Like, I don't think he's done anything that has been bad, right? Like, I mean, I was part of that, right? Like, I was part of that situation. So, like, I don't think he's made a move from a guy that's been over the age of 30 that has been – bad. And I think you have to look at each case on its own. And where's the guy at? Where are the needs on the team? How is he performing? How much money is he demanding? What, like, there's a lot of factors that go into it. If you have a super productive player at 30 years old, and he, I mean, if he's super productive, he's obviously demanding a high salary, but he's still doing a job in a position of need, you got to keep him. Like, and obviously things have to line up. He's not overly injured and things of that nature. Like, yeah, you keep him and you pay him, and he's a valuable member. But I don't think he has stepped wrong up to this point with what he's done with the older players. I mean, at least for, you know, from myself looking at it, because like I said, I was part of it. So I think he's done a good job. And like, what I would do is kind of, maybe I'd be a little bit different. I not too much different, because I think I would try to hold a little more veteran presence in the locker room. Mm-hmm. I think I'd probably want, I'm not saying I'd want 15 guys that are over 30 or anything like that, but I think I would want a little bit more of veteran presence within the locker room than besides my kicker and a linebacker, right? I think I'd want a little bit more. But I can't say Goody's done anything wrong up to this point, right? Like, I can't say that he's made a bad move letting an older player go. So, like, I can't say, and I can't say there's a move I would have done different. We'll just say that.
I would have paid Davante Adams in 2021, and I would be curious what their team would look like now.
Yeah, but I guess is that the. He wasn't going up to 30 at that point, was he?
No, but he was getting a third. I'm just saying, Brian, that that's a third contract, and he, meaning Goody, had specifically said, well, this guy's on a Hall of Fame trajectory. You make exceptions for that. We think he's still going to be productive, which, in fairness, he has been in less than ideal circumstances with the teams he went to. The Packers, and to Goody's credit, drafted well at the position. Now, there's if we get to the end of the season and they don't get further in the playoffs, or they punch out in the first round and their passing game isn't super productive, it's going to lead a whole nother round of questions about, hey, maybe there is value in having a clear-cut number one who can take over games and that kind of thing. But as of now, I can't, as the bigger Devontae stan on the panel, I can't argue that subsequently what he did at the position, he handled the position fine. So I can't say that at the moment that he didn't extend him, it was a mistake, but how he handled it after he did it, I have no argument. I can't get after him. Tausch, tell us a little bit about Coors Light so we can get to more Brian Bulaga and Tackle Talk.
Coors Light, brewed with a three-step cold process, cold lager, cold filtered, and it is cold packaged, so it's made to chill in those mountains. Oh, you know they're blue. Make sure that they are. That means it's chilled to perfection. That's why it is Coors Light in my hand when I need a moment to chill. Celebrate responsibly, Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. I'm going to ask Brian Bulaga next about the Jordan Morgan, how the Elgton Jenkins Center. Like, I'm fascinated for Brian. He breaks down the film as good as anybody. I want to get his report on how that crew did and how that maybe impacted the game last week. We will do that next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not big city we're in.
Well, since the big teaser teased his questions, I mean, I have to have a few things that I do around here. But hey, let me turn the tables and the show over to you.
I'm just trying to help. You've been doing a lot of trivia talk lately, and you're going to do double today. So take a little load off of you. It was my favorite part of the week when we get to just break down. I love hearing your analysis after you watched that film. Obviously, a lot of, you know, some changes with Josh not playing. Give us the overview. How did it look?
Yeah, I mean, it's things change when you don't have a starting center, right? Like, and regardless of what you may think of Josh Myers, I think he's been playing much better this season. And from week one up to obviously before he missed this last game, I think he's been performing much better. He's been much more consistent. You could tell he looks more confident in what he's doing. And that pays dividends when a center's able to do that. That gets everyone else in the right positions, and they're comfortable and they're confident with the call and what they need to be doing. They don't have to think about that. The quarterback feels good. There's a lot of things that, you know, go right when you have the same center that's making the same calls and everyone's on the same page. And that changed, obviously, against the Lions with Elton being in there. And there were some issues with, you know, the center quarterback exchange. It was a wet day, and that was an issue at times. And I think, not saying that Elton can't play the position. I know he can play the position. But those are factors that not a lot of people think of that impact the game more than just watching. Because once you have one bad, you know, QB center exchange, that's on the mind of the quarterback and the center every single play, because the rain never let up. It just got worse and worse, and that's something that continually they're working through throughout the game. I think also when you move a position, you're moving two positions, right? You're moving Elton to center, and you're inserting Jordan Morgan in a position and Sean Ryan in a position, and you're moving multiple guys around, which then, in theory, is the way I always looked at it, you're weakening two positions. And when you weaken two positions – you create problems that weren't there originally. And no matter how good you think the player is, that's not where he's been playing. Even if you think he can play there at a high level, he hasn't been playing at that position at a high level. He's been playing, say, with Elton at left guard at a high level. Well, now you put him in at center, and you put someone else in at left guard, and they have been playing left guard, it creates a problem. And that's kind of what I saw all game. And yeah, there were good moments for Jacobs. That, you know, I think he averaged around 7 and some change a carry or something like that. But it wasn't consistent enough. And the game, it was close, I guess you could say. But a lot of these carries and things like that is what I consider garbage time runs. And because you couldn't throw the ball, so there was no garbage time passing technically because of the weather. Even though it was a weird game, but the rushing numbers didn't really matter because of the way the game was played out and the way the Lions kind of just handled everything up front and how they played and how they rushed and how they stopped the run. And to me, it didn't give me, because when I talked to Home Run Monday, I watched it back again, and I probably had too early of a judgment after watching it, because I was maybe a little emotional about it after the first day watching. I watched it back
emotional
again, and it didn't. Little quick to judgment. I'll just say that, little quick to judgment. How about that? And I watched it back again, and it didn't give me the vibe of what I watched last year at home against the Lions, which was they beat the crap out of us.
Overmatched.
Right? I watched it again, and it didn't give me that vibe, but it gave me a vibe that we weren't mentally ready for that in those conditions against that opponent. When you watch the tape, they didn't look completely ready for what they were about to get. And in that type of game, you know you're going to get rain. You know your opponent. You have to be able to control the line of scrimmage. You have to be able to do it. And you know Hutchinson's not there. That's their biggest weapon. Hutchinson's not there. So you already know going into this game, their best weapon's not there. You can take advantage of this group if you play well and you're mentally dialed in. And they were never able to do that. And what the Lions did really well was mix up pressures, put the offensive line in positions, especially with guys moved around, that they weren't particularly comfortable being in. We'll look at the interception as a perfect example. Van Ginkle baiting, dropping, coming back, a delayed, you know, coffee mug type pressure, and gets a pressure, and Jordan Love throws it away for an interception, and it goes back for a touchdown. Like, those are the things that Not Van Ginkle. Anzalone, who's what it was. I'm thinking the Minnesota guy.
Long blonde hair sticking out the back of the helmet. Yeah. We got you.
Yeah, it's Anzalone. And that's kind of – and what happened on that pressure is Jorn Morgan had bad eyes, started to look one way. Looper was coming back around, and he was late picking up the looper.
Yeah.
And when you don't have someone that's playing that position consistently, you know, he's been playing right guard. Right. And the eye discipline is different on both sides of the football. It's just different. And you can sit here and tell me, oh, it's the same position. It is, but it's different. You see things in different ways from both sides of the football. And those are the small things that when you switch sides against a really good team in high pressure situations, those small margins are the things you miss. And that was just an example of it, and that's kind of what was going on throughout the game.
Did that surprise you that they went that way? Because when Myers left the Arizona game with the stinger, they left Jorn Morgan at right guard where he had been playing on a rotational basis, and they put the more experienced guy, right? Because Sean Ryan has more experience. And he was the one they moved to left guard to replace Elton when Elton went to center. I assumed that would be the approach they took, and I was wrong. And now when you say that about eye discipline and everything else, it feels it's not the same stakes, but it feels a little bit like when they made the decisions they made on the offensive line after they lost Bakhtiari and they played in that playoff game and they shook up the offensive line in a different way than they'd been playing, and it didn't work very well then either. I'm confused as to why they would go that direction.
Yeah, I thought 100% they'd leave Jorn Morgan at right guard where he's been playing and getting all of his snaps and where he's probably comfortable and what he's used to seeing and working next to Zach Tom, who is very good, probably a really good communicator, and that's a good pairing for him, right? He's comfortable playing next to a really high-end tackle. That's not taking anything away from Sheed, but Zach Tom's a high level operator, right? And when you have a young guy that hasn't gotten a ton of snaps, but now he's going to play the whole game, you want him next to a guy that's a high level dude, and that's Zach Tom. Mm-hmm. And Sean Ryan, like you said, is more experienced. Move him over to the left side. He's seen and done a lot of things. Let him go play over there and let him adjust. And that's what I thought they would do, and they didn't. And it's sometimes I think that backfired a little bit on him. And, like, I'm totally fine with letting Elton play center. I'm totally good with that because I think that's probably going to be a future move. I think I've said that to you guys before. I think that's going to be a future move down the pipe here. So, like, I'm good with that. But, like, I'm all for, like, continuity and stability with this thing. So, like, I would have been all for leaving Jorn Morgan at the right guard, letting him stay where he's comfortable, and letting Sean Ryan move around because he can.
You mentioned the play on which the interception occurs, and while I know your expertise is in the offensive line, as you watched that and you start to put together the 10 interceptions that Jordan Love has thrown, you know, I had a back and forth with Matt on Monday about this. It just feels to me, and I think Matt acknowledged this, that Jordan feels very good about what he's capable of doing. What he does not necessarily always do is say, okay, probably not the best time to take a chance. Let's just live to fight another day.
Take a beat.
Not a lot dinner. To be, you know, have a meal, spend some time with Lois. I look at that play, and yes, I suppose Josh Jacobs can break a tackle, but it's a whole mass of humanity there that you try to dump it into him in. You don't see the guy who picks it off for the pick six, but what was really going to be gained there? Like, you had a great shot play down the field, and if it had been blocked up, you got Jaden Reed for a 35, 40, maybe even a 62-yard touchdown. Once that's dead because of the pressure, throw the ball into the Lions bench and go play the next down. What do you see when you watch Jordan? Because you spent your entire career with a guy who did not throw those types of interceptions and certainly did not throw very many interceptions overall.
Yeah. I think what you said is spot on. He has a very high belief in himself, and he should, right? He mm-hmm. should believe that he can make any play, and that's what I really like about him. I do like his aggressive nature. The only thing that comes with the aggressive nature is knowing when to tame it, right? Like, and that's kind of what he's struggling with this year, and I don't think it is a future problem. Like, I don't think this is going to impact him 3-4 years down the road. I think it's a this year problem. And when he had all that success last year and how well he was taking care of it and how, you know, smooth everything was going, he probably thought as that was going on, I could probably take a few more risks, but I'm not going to do it. This year, he's thinking, I can take a few more of those risks. I think I could, you know, make some more of these plays, and he's doing it. And the result's not coming out all the, you know, coming out the way he wants it to be all the time. And there's someone like the last, you know, the one at Jacksonville wasn't that, like, that's an aggressive throw.
Sure.
Corner jumped it, made a good play. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can live with that. I'm good with that. Like, that's mm-hmm. not a big deal to me. The one against Detroit, I can't even give like a reason for it.
Right?
Like,
decision. I can't. Just a bad decision.
Yeah, just a bad decision, a bad kind of, you know, I would just like a brain fart. Like, that's really all I can really say is, like, he thought he saw something, he threw it, and it was not there at all. And that's really the best. And, like, those are the small things that, like, if he reins that in, he's fine. Like, I really believe that, like, he can change the trajectory of the season if he just kind of reins that in a little bit. And, like, I always look at it because I felt like Aaron was always so good about it. Like, how he, you know, we always looked at him like, man, why did he take that sack? Or why did he? Because Aaron always looked at things, like, a couple steps ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, if it's second down and six and I take a 3-yard sack, okay, we can fight on 3rd and 9 again, and we can get a first down. But if I try to force a ball in instead of taking a sack and we get a pick or something bad happens, well, that's a turnover on downs. And, like, as offensive linemen, it bothered us because, like, why'd you eat a sack there? Dude, you didn't need to eat it. But mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. understand as time goes on what he was doing and his process. I think Jordan, because of how he learned from Aaron, obviously, and how he saw and he's going through his own process – this is kind of his learning development, and it's part of the learning curve, and it's him figuring out, you know, the ups and downs and the yeses and the nos of being a quarterback in the NFL. And I think he's gonna figure it out. It's just unfortunate that, like, some of these things are happening and they're such glaring, like, no-nos, and they're happening right in, you know, in big moments, right? Like, like, you know, you're down 7 to Detroit. You do that and you're down 14 and essentially the game's done at that point. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not trying to be like Mr. Negative Nancy here, but the way the game was playing out, you go down 14, the game's was done, right? Like, and especially with them getting the ball at, you know, coming out of the half, mm-hmm. now you're down 21 and that's all she wrote. So mm-hmm. like, he's going to learn from it, and I think he's going to take a step back in this bye week and kind of look at it from a different perspective, and I'm sure they're talking about it, or they have talked about it in the meeting rooms, and just look at it from the different perspectives. From, like, I'm not saying, like, you know, you need to look at it from a fan's point of view, but, like, look at it from, like, the coach's point, what they're seeing and how it impacts other guys on the team, right? Like, the linemen, the receivers, and kind of – see it from a different point of view. And there's a lot of responsibility on the quarterback. There's a ton. And I don't envy that responsibility. I never did. All the pressure those guys have on them, what they have to do week in and week out, how perfect you expect them to be and how they are supposed to play. But taking care of the football, besides, like, throwing great, you know, passes all over the field and completing, you know, the main thing is to take care of the football. Like, that is A1, take care of the ball, protect it at all costs. And I think that's something he's going to self-evaluate over this bye week as he's getting healthy and healing his body. That's something he's going to self-reflect on. And I think, at least I hope, the second half of this season, I think the trajectory is going to go up of his, you know, decision-making and how he plays and taking care of the football. And it's going to look more like, you know, last season towards the end. Because, like, this this Detroit game for the whole team is a wake-up call, right? Like, because we've seen the trend of how they've been playing, right? Like the Rams game, lackluster. Houston game, I thought they played good, especially defensively, but, you know, Jordan had the two turnovers, a couple bad decisions, offense was up and down, but won the game. Go play the Jags, lackluster performance, almost lost. Then go kind of have a lackluster, then go have a lackluster performance against the Lions, definitely losing. So there's a trend and a pattern, and it's a wake-up call for the team, like, hey, we've been playing this way for the last 4 weeks. Like, we need to dial this in, because if we continue to go this way, our schedule's not getting easier after this bye week. Like, it's not getting easier. So we need to, you know, do some self-reflecting, dive in, and get this thing moving in the right direction. I think they will. I really do.
All right, Blue, I heard a great quote, and we'll let you go on this. A great quote after the game, and it was, I'm disappointed with the result of the Lions game, but I am not discouraged by this team's first half.
You didn't hear the quote. You said the quote.
I just want Brian's take. It's a really good quote.
If you do say so yourself.
If we sound grab it, I guess he did hear it also.
That's true. What do you make of that great quote, Blue?
Quote yourself at
I'm very disappointed in the result of the Lions game, but I'm not discouraged by the where we're at for the rest of this season.
Correct. I'm with you. I think that's a
great
good
quote.
That's a good quote. Yeah, because that's how I feel. And I think that's how I felt talking to Homer on Monday. I disappointed with that game, but where they're at in the season at 6-3, I feel good about it. I think they can still get to where they want to be as a team. They're not going to win the division. I'm going to say that right now. Like, I'm throwing that
out.
It'd
be tough sledding, yeah. I agree.
Yeah, but I still believe that they can see Detroit again at some point in the playoffs. I still believe that they got the team to meet them again and play them again. I mean, I know they play them again in the regular season, but
right.
I mean, you know, come playoff time.
I'm glad you're not discouraged, Brian. It's quite a way to say that word. All right, buddy, we appreciate your time. And we kept you a long time again. We'll see what happens.
No problem.
They start with the Bears after the bye. They got 8 games to go.
The Bears, they stink.
Yes, almost a little more even than the Arizona Cardinals at this point.
Too bad we didn't have time to talk about that Iowa game. That's too bad.
But Blue, by the way, Iowa smoked us. Well, Jesse brought it up, so when you get on clock talk, don't blame me. That campus and that whole setup is awesome. Like, I am a fan. I've only played down there. I never got to spend any time. It's a great spot. I am a Iowa City fan. Like, I've always loved Dubuque.
It is a good setup.
I wanted to annex Dubuque into Wisconsin.
Sure.
I'm an Iowa City guy, too. Beautiful, beautiful spot.
So, since Jesse brought it up, now you have to have your opportunity to gloat on him. By the way, of all the people on the panel that I would have thought might have brought that up, certainly not Jesse, who trash talks you, even though he's not a Wisconsin alum. So how much
did
you...
He wants a clip. He wants a Badger minute where Bulaga's crushing the... That's what he wants. Don't you know Jesse's game by now?
I don't.
Yeah, listen, like, I think Badger fans are... They had a bad weekend, so to speak. Like, reeling in a bad way, right? Like, so, like... I don't want to pile on too much, but
I will a little.
but I'm going to a touch here. I've watched just about every Iowa game this season, and I have not seen them dominate a team up front that way all year. And I certainly didn't expect it to come from Wisconsin. I thought this game was going to be really tight, and Wisconsin couldn't. I feel like every time Iowa ran the ball, it was 8 yards. It was guaranteed 8 yards, and I've just never
Blue, I'm going to tell you something. Year. I kept commenting, your left side of the offensive line wore our blank out. We had no answer. Didn't matter even who was running. It was just it was 4 yards off the ball, and it was very discouraging. I'll put it that way. Very discouraging.
Yeah, I agree, and I was biting my tongue throughout the game texting Jesse. I'm like, you know what? Iowa could throw a pick here, and it could change around, and it could go back. Like, something could happen, so I'm just going to bite my tongue. And then it got to 30 to something. I'm like, all right, this thing's done. Like, I'm texting Jesse. This is over.
Atta baby. All right, Brian, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
All right, guys, take care.
That is the great Brian Bulaga discussing.
What is Jesse doing, by the way? Why would he bring that up? What is he? Jesse, you're irritating. That's irritating. We're up against the clock, and you let we're starting to move past that debacle down in Iowa City, and you bring it up?
I mean,
what are we doing here?
When the guy wins, the guy wins. Like, sometimes you just got to hand it to him. We got our tuchuses handed to us in Iowa City on Saturday night. Hats off. Got to regroup.
It's a fun word, tuchus. I used that a bunch in the broadcast the other night.
Good work. Tucker took his craft.
Tim Dwight fell on his took us down skiing.
I know the game did not go the way the Packers had hoped, but again, every time they kick a field goal, there's reason to be excited, because when that happens, another $1,000 donated to Special Spaces Wisconsin from Steinhoffels. And Steinhoffels is partnering with Special Spaces Wisconsin and the Green Bay Packers. And I guess by extension now, Brandon McManus, after doing it with Braden Narveson earlier in the year, to create dream bedrooms for children battling cancer all across Wisconsin. This season, every time the Packers make a field goal, Steinhoffels will donate $1,000 to Special Spaces. I think we're at the halfway point of the season, or a little bit past. I think we're up to 16 or 17 field goals on the year. Steinhoffels has been Wisconsin's furniture and mattress leader since 1934, is 100% employee-owned, and a proud partner of the Green Bay Packers. The 10 o'clock hour starts in 2 minutes. So stick around. It's Wilde and Tausch.
Don't go anywhere. Another hour of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, is coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin, the ESPN app, and Wisconsin On Demand.